Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me, as always, is Fred Moreland. And Fred, I aspire to be the level of poster that Tony Khan is. It is truly remarkable how talented he is in this one area.
What a guy. What a singular kind of guy, I guess. After the news broke of Vince returning to WWE this past Thursday / Friday, Tony Khan tweeted, quote, "Everyone at work is being so nice to me these past 24 hours. I wonder why. It must be belated holiday spirit. See you tonight on TNT for 2 hours of AEW on TV Live."
Listen, Tony Khan is our king. Just a true poster in every sense of the word. What, like, it's just tremendous stuff, Fred. As my dog is acting like an absolute psychopath, next week when we record the show, he will be at the vet getting neutered, which hopefully will calm down some of these raucous puppy smells.
Well, speaking also of losing your nuts, let's talk about the WWE news. I honestly did not think this would happen, not because of it's outside the realm of what Vince McMahon would do, but more of I don't think Vince McMahon would put his money at risk like that. But yet here we are. He is, in case you have somehow been living under a rock, he's been taking over he has made a move with his voting power on his shares, where he has forced his way back onto the board of directors of WWE, along with George Berrios and Michelle Wilson, who were previous co-presidents of WWE before they were purged a few years ago. And now they're serving in a loyalist role, I presume, to Vince. He's being put in as the head of the board. And, ostensibly this is to get WWE ready for the next round of media contracts and also possibly for a big sale. I think I saw the reporting, though. At this point, I've read so much stuff about this, it all blends together, so I apologize for not citing this. I wasn't in note-taking mode at the time, but I'm under the impression that his plan for this is, we can sell it as long as I remain in charge, because that's extremely Vince behavior. But yeah, that's the big WWE news. And of course, as an AEW podcast, we should talk about how that ties into AEW. Because I think AEW really benefited talent-wise from when WWE was in charge and was cutting a lot of talent. And that's how AEW picked up several good talents, including Swerve Strickland, Keith Lee, Kyle O'Reilly, for a short bit, Bobby Fish. Miro when he's not angry online, and Andrade as well, but also when he's not punching people backstage to try to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
I assuming they do pursue a proper sale, I would not be surprised if they cut more people. That's usually a common move when people are preparing for sales. They cut down on their expenditures, so their business looks even better on paper, and they can bring more money out of whoever's buying it. There's been a lot of talk about who potential buyers are. This is basically all the big media companies that you probably would think of. CNBC had a article where a guy projected some potential buyers. There's also the possibility that someone will buy it and take it private. It's just a very interesting time. Pretty gross, too, if I'm being honest about the return of Vince after all the allegations against him. But that's WWE. They just you know, not a priority. But
you think it can't get worse, and then Vince will sell to the Saudis and still be the booker. And then you think it still won't get worse, but it somehow will. And the only way it won't get worse is if Vince sells it to an actual corporation that says, hey, yeah, you can be the booker, but then says, oh, hey, all these assault charges, now we have reason to cause to fire you, and we'll just get rid of you, like, on the spot. Like, that's probably your best case scenario here. Pro wrestling is good when WWE is good. Everybody would love for WWE to be good because of the amount of sheer talent on that roster. There's no excuses why it should be this bad, but it is, because the booking is bad, the house style is bad, what, like, their WWE isms are bad. Like, you can't call them a wrestler. You can't call it a title belt. You can't call it a title shot. It's an championship opportunity. Like, all those little isms. Like, just imagine having to reprogram Michael Cole to call a wrestling match outside of WWE. It would be a daunting task. Because
what, though? I mean, I know he's, hey, he mentioned PWG on TV once, so.
Oh, my gosh. He read three letters in succession. He's a changed man. Like, I understand the sentiment, but at the end of the day, Fred.
Well, that was deep sarcasm on my part, just to be entirely clear.
Oh, I know. But we're talking about a company that's so ingrained in their own stupidity that they don't know how to get out of it. The only way to get out of it is with new voices. And they desperately need those new voices. Desperately.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. I think that we're very much in a position where WWE is just moving further and further from doing anything fresh. The longer Vince stays involved, I think that his, he stepped away from the company, but then again, the booking really didn't change that much. So how much did he actually step away? Was he helping out backstage in a hush-hush way, or, you know, what? But yeah, this is just not surprising. It shouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, exactly. But enough talk about one of the worst people in the history of the human race, Vince McMahon. Let's talk about something that matters, like, in a positive way. Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, did officially make her debut on Wrestle Kingdom, which we will talk about a little bit later on in the show. But more specifically, in terms of AEW, she is wrestling at Battle of the Valley on February 18th in San Jose. And once her name was added to the card, tickets have almost sold out within the past 5 days. She is obviously a draw in the States, and this, to a point, confirms it. Now, there's going to be immediate speculation on, you know, hey, she's a great draw right now. But I'm very curious if this debut wrestling goes poorly in any way, shape, or form. Because that debut in the Tokyo Dome could have been better. Let's just be honest. That move that she gave her, it looked like she was trying to transition from a gory special into like a
DDT, right?
It was almost like an Edge Impaler DDT was what she was trying to do.
Yeah.
And Kyrie either didn't get the memo, Moné botched it, or a combination of both. It just didn't land how it should have. And I think if it would have landed, I think it would have gone a little better. Plus, when it comes to English promos, they don't nearly hit as well with a Japanese audience as they would have been in Japanese. That didn't help either. So when you kind of combine everything, it was probably like a 4 out of 10 debut, but she got a genuine reaction from the Wrestle Kingdom crowd. It created a ton of buzz, and it's already moved a lot of tickets. Will she continue to move tickets is another story, but she is drawing real, real excitement from the Western fan base, and that is exactly what Bushiroad wanted.
Yeah, she added, 20,000 new accounts on New Japan World that could in part 40. Be credited to her? 40? Okay. 40 between her, the Osprey Omega match, and just the general Tokyo Dome with pretty much a real crowd. Yeah, those were big numbers. I don't think you can attribute them all to her. You can't attribute them all either to Osprey Omega, but all three of them played a big part in it. And those are impressive numbers. And I think arguably even more impressive than the Jericho one, because this comes after the Jericho growth. So, you know, you have to question how much of that growth was sustained. It looks like Tyler is being eaten by Odie right now, so this may become a solo podcast. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a flawless debut by any stretch. I thought it was fine, just totally fine. The move was botched. People were, you know, kind of giving her a hard time to some extent about the promo. But frankly, I think that the, you know, that's what a English-speaking wrestler typically does in front of a Japanese crowd when they do a promo in the on the house mic in front of the crowd, is they do the... these I'm speaking very slowly and over enunciating because I want to be sure that you understand what I'm saying while I'm using these short, simple sentences. It's you know, I don't think that's any real indictment of anything. It's just what is commonly done. I think especially if you're not used to doing that, I think she probably laid it up a little bit. Yeah, we'll see going forward. Now, is this New Japan show, is that going to be on Fight or is that going to be on New Japan World?
It is going to be a pay-per-view available to purchase in Japan on New Japan World, available to purchase in the West on Fight. I believe the cost is going to end up being $24.99, which you can buy on voicesofwrestling.com/fight. Make Get sure you do there. That to give us a little bit of a support. I think the big thing coming out of this for me, Fred, is the potential of her debuting this upcoming Wednesday at the Forum. And let's kind of transition sure. back to AEW with the Sasha Banks stuff, or sorry, Mercedes Moné. We had a tease, and it's officially been announced that the match is going to be Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker versus Saraya and Toni Storm. Mm-hmm. This came in two promos. The first one was a sit down with Renee Paquette and both Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker, and Britt Baker did drop the boss line, which we all know that Sasha Banks was the boss in WWE. And then later it was Jamie Hayter sitting with Toni Storm flanking her on her right and Hikaru Shida on her left. And she outright said that the best wrestler on the women's roster was Toni Storm and looked at her and started strategizing right in front of Shida, kind of planting seeds that this could end up being a turn and we still get the debut of Mercedes. Now, my question for you, Fred, is twofold. One, do you believe that Mercedes Moné is coming in for this match? And two, do you agree with how this was went about? Because it feels like you have her debuting. You should be leaving the door a little more open than this.
You know, I don't think that they want to do a thing where they screw up the debut by... you know, making you, well, the non-debut in this circumstance, where they make you think that she's showing up and then surprise, she doesn't. I think that would be quite bad for them. I think that would cause a lot of hurt feelings and burn some bridges with some fans that you could otherwise win over. I think that, I don't know if she's going to debut. Dave Meltzer has talked about how several people have told him from various areas of wrestling that they have heard that she is not going to sign with AEW at this point in time. And then Brian Alvarez on the same show in the same conversation told him that he had heard that she was. So who knows whose game of telephone is correct. There are several intriguing ways you could go about doing a debut on the show. Obviously you could have like Shida fully turn heel, immediately take out Toni Storm from the match. Oh no, Saraya doesn't have a partner. Who could it possibly be? Surprise, it's Moné. And that would be her big surprise debut. Alternatively, you could have her debut after the match, possibly under the same circumstances or just after a heel win or to cut off a heel beatdown. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a couple possibilities of how they could play it. I don't know that it's a situation. I think they've carefully avoided overpromising, and I think that's important for them. And I think that's smart because you obviously don't want to leave too, you know, big hints that she isn't coming. Now, the Britt Baker line would be really weird to leave in a pre-tape in a company that is this carefully managed if she's not coming in. So I do have to think that at some point she's coming in. It may not be this Wednesday. It may be something they're going to tease for a few weeks since she's debuting somewhere else. Probably not Lexington, Kentucky. I don't think that'll have the same cachet as Los Angeles for some reason. Sorry to say that to anyone else that happens to live in Las Vegas.
Isn't Mercedes from Los Angeles? Does she currently live there? Because I know there is a genuine connection, and I believe they're like cousins with her and Snoop Dogg. And I know Snoop Dogg is from the Los Angeles area, so that, because we all know that Snoop has a real connection to USC, which obviously located in Los Angeles. So if that ends up being the case, that could be very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. She has on Wiki, she is listed as being born in Fairfield, California, which I am told is in around halfway between San Francisco and Sacramento. And she's also been billed from Cambridge or Boston, Massachusetts, though I don't know what, like, they did live in Boston for a while. So growing up, I don't know where she is currently. It would not surprise me if it was near LA due to her acting aspirations. But it'd be so interesting, you know, I think that's a pretty, it would be somewhat surprising to me at this point, I think, if she is not debuting this week, but we'll see. You know, never say never in wrestling.
Yeah, never say never. And don't be surprised if this match ends up going without a hitch and then we get the Mercedes debut, because look,
that's another way you could do it for sure.
Tony Khan has been, and I wrote about this a couple years ago, after about a year of the pandemic, and how they've been really smart about booking this women's division, because they just didn't have enough talent to be able to feature it consistently without just running through the same programs over and over again, which they end up spamming anyways. The amount of times Nyla Rose has had a title shot was because they did not have enough depth, and a lot of the people that they had, like a Penelope Ford's got potential. She's not really someone you want to have on TV every week because she's so green. The only reason you have Jade Cargill on every week, we're going to talk about her later, it's because it's Jade Cargill. Look at her. That is an attraction. That is a star presence. You deal with the fact that she's not great in the ring yet. But they've been slowly trying to build this thing and do it right and get people in. Now, the jury is still out, and if Saraya won, how often is she going to wrestle? She's wrestled once since she came into the company since Grand Slam? Does she have a contract where she's only wrestling like six times a year, but she's there to just help boost the presence of the division? You know, kind of what is her status there? And they've been just trying to build up depth. Getting Toni Storm was a huge get. Getting back Jamie Hayter, because she left at the beginning of the pandemic. It's also how they lost Bea Priestley, who's now retired in NXT UK. Like, bringing those two women in, keeping Hikaru Shida, getting Riho back. Like, imagine how great a full-on Riho Jamie Hayter program would be, with just the powerhouse that Hayter is, and Riho being just the great plucky babyface who can take punishment like nobody else in this division. They can continue to do some of those things now because they have talent depth, something that they haven't really had before in the history of this promotion. I'm very excited to see what it could be, and the addition of Monet could take this thing to another level, because now you can genuinely have multiple women's programs with top stars and feel really good about how they will draw ratings-wise, which is something you wouldn't be able to say before. This could be the end of, hey, we're just going to shove you on quarter hour six so we can get you on the show. This is like, hey, we're going to put you on quarter hour four, quarter hour five. You're going to open the show. Like, these are the kind of things, like, look at what Hayter and Storm did with their opportunity when they main event to Dynamite. They killed it. We had people in our Slack giving that 4.75. Like, that's people who've seen a lot of wrestling and thought that match was that good. Hell, it was in the top five, I believe, on both of our running Dynamite Dozen lists.
I think so, because
we had a lot of respect for it. Now,
top three.
Yeah, you're right. It was top three. They're going to continue to build this women's division, and they need someone like Monet. And I'm very intrigued to see, one, I believe she's coming. That is my belief as a wrestling analyst. But I'm very intrigued to see how they do it, because how they do it is going to be, in my opinion, more important than just doing it, because reintroducing her to a fan base that, one, knows who she is, but they don't necessarily follow WWE. So there's crossover, absolutely. But AEW and WWE are such different products, and the antithesis of AEW is it's not WWE. So introducing her to this fan base and showing that, one, she's a big star because she's her and not because of WWE, I think it's just going to be as important as just bringing her in a vacuum.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, and it'll be very interesting to watch. I don't, you know, the cool thing right now is it's not entirely clear what they're going to do. They could punt it down the stretch a little bit, which, again, I don't think will happen, but that's on the table. It's possible that they may not have pounded out all the contract details yet. It's possible that they don't want her to join right now because they don't want to, you know, possibly reveal that they were contract tampering when she was still under a WWE deal without permission to negotiate with anyone. But
and that's a really good point, Fred, something that really hasn't been talked about enough, because her contract was done and at the end of day, December 31st.
That's right. So years in, she could start negotiating with anyone that wasn't New Japan per the reporting that's out there. I believe it was, well, Rich Krejci is who I heard bring up the possibility of delaying it to not, you know, to avoid tampering accusations. Though you could always just argue that, hey, we came to a quick agreement, I guess. But yeah, you know, if she does come into AEW, that's, I think, a big score for the women's division, for that company. I think that'll do a lot to really bolster the talent level within it. And I think it opens up a lot of interesting possibilities, because not only do you have, like, the obvious ones of Monet versus, you know, well, they'll do something with Saraya, I'm sure, which is lower on my list. But, you know, there's Britt Baker, there's Jamie Hayter, there's Sheeta, then there's, you could bring in Riho, Yuka Sakazaki, even Maki Ito over from Tokyo Joshi Pro, which could be a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm very excited to see where this goes, and hopefully it goes somewhere.
Fred, me too. I hope it goes somewhere, because look, anytime you can bring more quality wrestlers into a company, I'm all for it. But let's continue to move on, because we have quite a bit to talk about. And we were talking about Wrestle Kingdom with the debut of Mercedes Moné. Let's continue to talk about that. Will Ospreay took on Kenny Omega. You know, Omega's first match with New Japan in 4 years, as the last match he had in New Japan was a loss to Hiroshi Tanahashi in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom 13. He beats Will Ospreay in a match that I am calling the greatest match of all time. And I watched it a second time. And what was truly astounding to me is the greatest match of all time for me before that was Omega Okada 4, the best 2 out of 3 falls. But the real brilliance of that match, Fred, was how well they had built that match, considering they used elements from all 3 previous matches. And this match not only was brutal, not only did it have tremendous work, great spots, and just incredible, incredible stuff from both of these men, they set up multiple matches, and they have stuff that they continue to build on. One of the themes from the match was the fact that Will Ospreay did not hit the Stormbreaker despite multiple attempts. And that's always been his kind of like uber finisher. You mm-hmm. hit the Stormbreaker, you're done.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing like with the One-Winged Angel, when Omega tried relentlessly to hit the One-Winged Angel in that first Tokyo Dome match with him and Okada. Now you have the same thing with Ospreay. And he cuts a promo afterwards, says, if I can't beat him within a year, he's basically done. Which to me signifies that, hey, I wouldn't be shocked if Omega wins the belt from Okada and then he loses it to Will Ospreay in the first ever Gaijin Tokyo Dome main event next year at Wrestle Kingdom 18. Because to me, that's what it sets up as. You'll have Ospreay probably win the G1 and he'll be able to brag about, oh, Kenny, you did it, but I did it better because there were 4 blocks. But in all honesty, it was great to see a different side of Kenny Omega. And he appeared at New Year's Dash teaming with Kazuchika Okada, and Omega just kept staring at that IWGP World Heavyweight Championship belt, which is going to make things really interesting when we get that announcement for Forbidden Door this year. Fred, what did you think of the match? Did you like seeing that different version of Kenny Omega? Because it was not AEW Omega.
No,
it was the cleaner.
Yes.
And we got to see the cleaner again. What did you think of it?
That was the only match I've been able to watch off the card so far. I haven't seen anything off New Year Dash yet either. I've seen basically the Monet debut and the Omega Ospreay, and I thought it was amazing. I thought it was just a really fantastic match. It wasn't what I thought it'd be, but I think that's actually made it better. It was just Omega beating the holy hell out of Will Ospreay for the majority of the match. Ospreay got several hope spots, but it was just, it was brutal. Both guys had blood by the end of it. And I mean, it was just worked perfectly. I can't say enough good things about it. It's one of the very best matches I've ever seen in my life. If you haven't seen it and, you know, you're interested, you should absolutely go out of your way to see it. It was interesting to me because I thought that, Omega worked far more heel than I thought it would be. And I thought it would be more of a kind of a down the middle, you know, something of a tweener face off. But not at all. But I thought it was an amazing performance by both guys and, just great stuff. Top shelf stuff.
Oh, it was top shelf stuff. And what really sealed it for me was one, Will Ospreay came out as the aerial assassin, which these two have only met one other time in a singles match. And I believe that was 2015 in PWG, and Omega ended up coming out on top. Cause I think at that point, Ospreay was like 19. Like he was a young kid, and he was still trying to figure out little things about the wrestling business. And he has it all figured out now, obviously, because he is as well versed as he is. And he is one of the few people that will actually listen to criticism and continue to grow and evolve. And two, the little nuances that you just don't appreciate until you go back and rewatch, like that spot where Omega just has him up in the air and then ends up turning that into like a catch German suplex where they're standing on the top turnbuckle. Just remarkable. These guys were incredible. I don't think this was a match you could have had anywhere else other than Wrestle Kingdom. I wouldn't be shocked if they do this one time in the States. Maybe it's at Forbidden Door, Double or Nothing. But I think these guys are going to have a long series of matches over the next couple of years, and it's going to be incredible. If you have not gone to watch it yet, I cannot recommend enough that you do. Even people that I know that don't like Kenny Omega or Will Ospreay, we're throwing 5 stars at this thing because that's how good the match was. There's a reason why it's getting best match of all time buzz, because it's on the same level as 6995. It's on the same level as Misawa versus Kobashi from 03. It's on the same level as anything that you could put up against it. It was truly remarkable.
Yeah, the only thing that comes to mind, at least of the past year that I would even consider putting above it, and I think I might slightly, is the Dog Collar Briscoes FTR match. I think that may have been just a touch better, but it's real close. Both were just fantastic bouts. And this had such a wonderful atmosphere, too, with the crowd finally being able to, in Tokyo Dome, be loud, to make noise. And that always makes such a big difference. And I think one of the best parts, if you will, of the pandemic is we kind of got to see that firsthand, just how important that is.
Yeah, 100%. This is an all-timer, and it should be no surprise that Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay decided, hey, we're just going to exceed absurd expectations for this match. And they did. It's unfortunate because the Jay White and Okada that went on right after it felt dead as doornails. And that was still a 4.5-star match.
Yeah.
But that is something that you were going to need to check out. More, Fred, I saw that you put this in the show notes. We had the FSM Fighting Spirit Magazine 50 for 2022 was released today. It is because Fighting Spirit Magazine unfortunately had to fold. It is now published on voicesofwrestling.com. The top five, you ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Number five, Konosuke Takeshita with his tremendous year in AEW. Number four, John Moxley, who's arguably the MVP of the entire wrestling world. Number three, if you have not seen him, you will need to go out of your way because he's tremendous. Dragon Gate Shun Skywalker. He's been doing a lot of shots on the U.S. Indies and in Mexico as of recently, but he is an incredible wrestler. Number two, Kazuchika Okada, the new Japan ace. And number one, a man we just talked about extensively, Will Ospreay. Do you have any issues with the top five as it currently sits?
I can't speak on Skywalker because of my inability to watch Dragon Gate regularly. It seems like it's always the year where I tell myself I need to watch more Dragon Gate, and then I don't. This year I watched three matches, though, so hey, good job me. But yeah, I just suck at following that promotion, really. I think it's a pretty solid top five. I have no complaints about it whatsoever. Looking at it, I think Takeshita's had a wonderful year. And I mean, just basing off of what he's done in AEW, I thought he was fantastic. Ospreay, I think, is a no-brainer. Okada is also a no-brainer, I feel like. Moxley, I actually would have had him second, personally speaking. But yeah, I think it's a very solid list. One thing I will take slight umbrage with is I get listing Dax Harwood where they did, which is seventh, but not having Cash Wheeler in the top 50 doesn't feel right, given how great FTR's year was. And it's not like Cash Wheeler's being carried along here. He's a very active contributor to these matches and how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing that's jumped out to me that I would say I wish that he had representation himself on the list. He deserves it, and also is much quieter, which is, a plus sometimes. The AEW people in the top 50 are the Young Bucks at 11, Bryan Danielson at 13, Chris Jericho at 18, Rey Fénix 21, Pac at 28, Daniel Garcia at 38, Bandido 39, Hangman Page 41, CM Punk at 45, The Briscoes at 46, Swerve Strickland at 47, and then Jamie Hayter at number 50. And I believe she is the only woman wrestler on the list that is based in North America. There's several from Stardom, and there may have been one from another promotion, maybe Tokyo Joshi Pro, that I scrolled past, but... Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very, very solid list.
Here's what's fascinating to me. You have written on here that Dax Harwood is at number 7. There is no Cash Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
But the Briscoes are at 46. I understand if you want to put Dax a little bit higher than Cash because of the single success that he has had this year. But to not have Cash on there at all, to me, is a massive, massive oversight.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me that they incorporated, that the voters, that there are enough of them voting Dax highly for him to secure seventh and for Cash to not secure a top 50. What that says to me is that there are several people putting Dax in their top 5 or top 10 or otherwise very high on their ballots, but not including Cash at all, which I find interesting. I disagree with, but hey, it's a personal list. I can't get too fired up about it, but yeah.
Yeah, it is a very cool project that these guys end up spearheading every single year, and it's really cool that we're able to host it at voicesofwrestling.com. Please make sure you'll check it out. I will have it included in the show notes, so it'll be more easily accessible to you. And as we continue to talk business, which is kind of what the FSM 50 is, let's talk about the Young Bucks for a second, Fred. Their contract expires at the year's end or in early 2024. Extension talks have not yet started. To me, I wouldn't be concerned, but I will say that I think we should at least be a little bit concerned considering the fallout from Brawl Out. Now, even though CM Punk is no longer with the company, at least in any capacity at the moment, will he return? We don't know. Like, there's a lot of what if there. But the Young Bucks were suspended for 2 months. Same with Kenny Omega. They were stripped of their trios titles, which they had just won. It would not shock me if there was some animosity there. And sometimes animosity can just snowball and keep adding fuel to the fire. And then all of a sudden, you're done. You just don't want to work for that individual anymore. So I think that needs to be in the back of our minds. Do you have any concern that they will not be with the company after their contract is done?
Not particularly at this time. I'm not terribly surprised that there isn't a contract yet, just because they came up on the last year over the holidays, it sounds like. So that's not usually a unless a contract is expiring, that's usually not a hard negotiation time. I would think. I think most people would be focused on just spending time with their family. I know off of being the elite that one of the Bucks was off on vacation. I forget which one at this point. Off on vacation for the last week, so that would probably hamper any negotiations. I wouldn't assume that they're going to be leaving the company until we hear something far more concrete about that. You left yourself on mute, buddy.
We're going to leave that in there so I can get buried in the comments. I wonder. We're live, Fred, pal. Hey, you know what? We're live, and I have a rambunctious puppy. At least he's not biting my finger anymore. I wonder if the Young Bucks will have the WWE bug. And here's what I mean. They've openly talked about a match with I don't remember their names. Kofi Kingston.
New Day.
Xavier Woods. New Day, yes. And the Usos. And being able to go there and have those matches, I wonder if that's something that the Bucks would want to do before they leave, because I don't get the sense that the New Day or the Usos will likely ever leave the company unless they're forced out. So that is something that I'm going to be thinking about as we continue to have these conversations until we get more word on the Young Bucks, because they finally got the FTR match. They had two of them, and I hope they get a third, because like that was one of the biggest matches that the Young Bucks had that they did not have on their resume. Now, will they be able to see these dream matches come to fruition? That I don't know, but it's something that's going to be interesting come contract time.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I just think it's way too soon to have any kind of specific concerns at this point in time.
Yeah, it's something to keep in mind. Some more on the business end of things. Pro Wrestling Tees listed its 25 biggest merchandise movers of 2022. And I'm just going to save you some time. On this list is a bunch of AEW wrestlers. The only non-AEW wrestlers on this list are Ric Flair at number 16 and Scott Hall, the late Scott Hall at number 20.
Yep.
The top five goes to such. Five is Jon Moxley. Four is the Acclaimed, which daddy ass Billy Gunn is at 25. Three is MJF. Two is CM Punk. And one, Danhausen. Now, there was a lot of like, why in the world would you sign Danhausen? Well, he moves money. He's fun. You don't have to have a variety show with wrestling, but when you have a variety show, you just have to make sure everything is good. Danhausen has been booked flawlessly for what his position on the card is, what he brings to your program, and he has not been over-pushed at all. I think this is a great asset to AEW for what he's able to do, and he's bringing in money. Number one t-shirt seller in all with all pro wrestling tees. That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, that's a big deal, and I'm sure he's making a nice bit of cash, and good for him. I mean, I think it's definitely a beneficial move by the company. They booked him very well. They've kept him, you know, from being like a heavily pushed, like a main event level act. He's at a very good level for him. And I think, you know, it's been a great year for him and AEW.
100%. Unfortunately, we also got news that the mother of Dustin Rhodes passed away. That was Dusty Rhodes' first wife. So all our condolences go to him and his family. You'll be able to speak more highly on this because I genuinely don't know much about it. Mark Quinn is injured. What do you know, Fred?
I know very little, actually. That right there is literally the note about him in the Observer this week. Is Mark Quinn is injured. Doesn't specify what it is. Doesn't specify how long he'll be out. AEW's gotten really tight-lipped about injuries over the past year, which is very disappointing. It's just we'll see how long he's out, if it's serious. But as far as I know, there's just no other information out there right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Now let's start talking about some AEW wrestling. Dynamite ratings, 864,000, which with their lowest 18 to 24 demographic since this exact week in 2021. And I was at a 0.26, 18 to 49. That was also with opposite NXT. And obviously you had the Capitol storming, where a lot of quote unquote patriots stormed the Capitol and essentially tried to overtake the government. We all know how that ended up going. Now, one question I want to pose to you, Fred, about this is I did mention it to Joe Lanza because he does the Thursday Dynamite reviews on the Voice of Wrestling Patreon. I find it interesting that there was that. This year on January 4th, we had the new House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, fail. I think at that point it was 7 or 8 votes to become the Speaker. So I wonder, I opined to him, do you think that maybe this had any impact? Did you see any growth from some of those other, like other news programs, because people, young people are following along? Because look, if you fail a couple times, okay, the way the House is set up makes some sense. But he failed like 13 at the end of the day. So I wondered if that was the case, but we also know that people are just not watching TV nearly as much live as they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, Dynamite was still number 4 on the nightly rankings, and I think it was just behind sports. I don't recall a news broadcast being listed above it, and I remember the chart from January 6, 2019, or 2021, I'm sorry. I can't subtract 2 correctly anymore. But they the charts that night were absolutely crazy with just how many news shows were in the top 50 unusually. Like sometimes, you know, you'll get Fox News pretty high on it with a few broadcasts, and then, you know, you'll eventually get to like CNN or MSNBC or whatever. But that's not what that chart looked like. That chart was like 40 out of the top 50 were news channels. And that's not what happened this past week. I think the McCarthy story was a story. People were paying attention to it, but I don't think a lot of people were tuning into any news programs to like watch along with the votes as he failed over and over again to get chosen. First time in nearly a century, I believe it was, for a failed election of a Speaker of the House. But yeah, you know, there's ways you can spin this a little bit. I think you could say that, you know, the viewership of TV is dropping, and so inevitably that's going to have an effect on these numbers to some extent. The fact that they finished fourth still is, you know, you can probably try to point to that as a positive. But I don't know how you can look at this as anything but a bad number. Now we'll see if that's part of a trend. And that's what's important, is not to react to a single number, but to go forward and look at trends and how they play out over weeks. You know, jumping to conclusions on one rating is a bad usage of data. But yeah, this was not great for AEW, I don't think.
No, definitely not great. But the fact that they are continuously in the top 5 of the 18 to 49, I think it's not a panic situation. I think it's more of just a frustration. Obviously, tonight ends the college football season with Monday night having the national championship game. Go Hypnotoad. I hope TCU beats the living crap out of Georgia. And then the NFL playoffs start this upcoming Saturday, and they will run through February 12th. It's a big time right now for football, and I think that's probably hindering it a little bit. Plus, you also have the Christmas holiday just finished up. People are still getting together for Christmas. I have to get together with my father-in-law still to celebrate Christmas, because there's only so much you can do. Making sure you get together with everybody, it's just nearly impossible. But it's going to be interesting to continue to follow these ratings. As my dog is chewing on a plastic bottle. I hope you cannot hear that.
I can.
He is. Oh, it's all right, Fred. Well, it's okay. Odie. He's cuter than belief. It's just honestly insane. But let's talk about Dynamite, Fred. This was a good show.
Oh, I like the show a lot.
Like when I sat and finished this show, I thought that this was a good, not great Dynamite, but I also think that we're too spoiled when it comes to Dynamite, because if this was a Raw, we would be talking about this as an all-time show.
I thought this was a really good show that was elevated to great by a super hot crowd. That Seattle crowd was into everything. And that really made a big difference. I feel like they used the hometown talent perfectly. And I think that helped a lot. Aubrey Edwards' usage on the show and Rampage were both fantastic. And shows that it's actually good to have refs with a little personality and not just try to treat them as nameless drones like WWE does these days. I love this show. You want to go through it segment by segment?
Yeah, let's do it. Segment was Absolute Ricky Starks against the Ocho Chris Jericho with 2.0 in his corner. Look, this was tremendous. Ricky Starks, Joe Lanza ended up saying it, and I will say it. Like, just continue to put Ricky Starks in babyface positions He is just screaming and clawing to get out of submission. Oh, Ricky Starks is so good. He ends up getting the win with a spear, and Excalibur says at the end of the match, the story here is Chris Jericho has dropped 2 in a row. So we could end up having a losing streak here for Chris Jericho, which I think could be a very interesting story.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, it's I think they're setting up the breakup of JAS with starting by Jericho having a losing streak. And I think this was a really nice step on that path. You know, Starks is fantastic. I've been talking about him for months, and like Lanza has been on this for years now. But it's apparent that he's going to be a superstar once he gets the rocket strapped to him. And I think we're seeing that rocket get strapped on right now. It's not a matter of when. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when. Presuming health. He's just so good at so many things. He's a very good in-ring performer, but that's probably the least of his strengths. He's got so much charisma. He's great on the microphone. He can sell great. He does the all the little facial expressions really draw people in during his matches. He's got a great character. He's like everything. He's got everything.
Yeah, he really does. And it's just some of the little nuances from Starks, just absolutely remarkable. I gave this 4.25. This is going to end up on my running Dynamite Dozen. And look, I still wouldn't have been mad if they put the belt on Ricky Starks and screwed MJF and gave him the Tetsuya Naito first IWGP title reign, because Starks is here. He is a made man. And it's hard to argue against pushing him to the moon.
Yeah, he's just, it's wonderful. His work, he's got so much skill. And I thought this was a very nice match. I went 3.75 on it. A little short of notebook for me. But, you know, a blast to watch.
Yeah, 100%. Let's continue on. The next segment was an interview in the ring with Hangman Adam Page. John Moxley hits the ring shortly thereafter, and we get some nice F-bombs from John Moxley because he had some microphone issues, which is just tremendous. Mox,
get Rick Ross back out here.
Yeah. Oh gosh, when Rick Ross just looks at Keith Lee and on the hot mic, he's like, "You're a big motherfucker." All time television moment, because it's Rick Ross. He's a better talker than most people in professional wrestling. This is a really good promo segment, and they basically said, hey, Hangman Page hasn't been cleared, but he should be cleared by next week. And on Rampage, it was officially announced he is cleared, so we will be getting Hangman Page versus John Moxley on the January 11th Dynamite. I thought this was a good way to set it up. I don't know how much I like the fact that, like, oh, I'm going to be cleared on this date, but I'm not cleared right now. I think you're just murking things up a bit, but I'm being nitpicky at this point. Look, these guys are going to have a tremendous feud, and I think this is step one. And it wouldn't shock me if we get some kind of exploding barbed wire death match at the end of this thing.
Yeah, and it's a way for them to avoid the "we've agreed to no physicality" gimmick. So, you know, I'm fine with it. We should have mentioned the post-match on the previous segment where JS came out and actually Andretti made a save for a short period of time, but they were eventually overwhelmed by the numbers of the heels and had enthusiast Jake Hager powerbombed. Was it Starks? Let me look at my notes here. Yeah, Starks threw the table. So that was a fun addition to that match. And then we had the Mox and Page promo as well.
Yeah, really good stuff. And then we had AEW World Tag Team Championship match, The Acclaimed versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. Fred, if we were grading matches based on fun and vibes, this gets 7 stars. This match was fun. You had Max Caster coming out and doing an anti-total nonstop action wrestling rap that was just amazing. You had Billy Gunn get ejected by the ref. Sanjay had to push off Anthony Bowens' leg from the bottom rope in order to secure the victory. You had the celebration with Lethal and Jarrett before hometown hero Aubrey Edwards, who was already down there because of the chaos down at ringside, which is a great little touch.
Yes.
And she ends up telling the referee that, hey, you need to restart it. 40 seconds later, Bowens gets a sitting roll-up pin, and boom, they retained the belts. And we can talk about this now since we're already talking. You and I both watched Rampage on Monday morning. The match they had on Rampage was just as fun.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
They were both very fun to watch. I gave them both 3.5 stars. I don't think that they were the work was good enough to really elevate it beyond like just a really fun TV match in either case, but they were really fun TV matches. These were both very good examples of how to work bullshit matches. Just lots of stuff going on, and the chaos really made it fun. But yeah, I liked this a lot. I liked how they had an excuse for Aubrey to be down there to restart the match. It made perfect sense. And then they immediately went to a roll-up finish and had the babyfaces win to set up Friday night. Next up, they had the backstage Tony Schiavone sit down with Hayter and Baker. They were talking about who Saraya's partner possibly could be. And, the Baker and Hayter said that Saraya doesn't get AEW, that both of them had rougher starts to their time in AEW, but they're running things now. And this is where Baker dropped the "I'm the boss" line, and then I believe winked at the camera. Very subtle. But yeah, this was a fun little segment. And then we had a short promo where Jungle Hook challenged Lee Moriarty and Large Bill. Then we got Bryan Danielson and Tony Nese. And this is not what I was expecting here, but it was okay, because it was Danielson basically killing a guy to death. Just Tony Nese got, for most of the match, just sold. This was not a 50-50 match at all. This was a Bryan Danielson, largely a showcase for him, with a few moves for Nese after a hot start. I went 3 stars on this. I thought it was fun, but not essential by any stretch.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. You got to see Danielson get a win, and this was honestly just to be able to have him perform in front of the home crowd. He did perform in Portland on Rampage, which we'll talk about later with John Moxley. But this was all to set up MJF coming out, and they ended up going back and forth. And essentially, he's going to have to go through a gauntlet, just like most of MJF's challengers have had to do, which we can talk about if this is, that aspect is getting a little long in the tooth. But the second that I knew that... I heard Bryan Danielson, yeah, I'll do whatever you want, but I get to pick the stipulation. I'm like, please be an Iron Man match. Please be an Iron Man match. And they're doing a 60-minute Iron Man match, which the inner dork inside MJF is jumping for joy that he gets to do 60 minutes with arguably the greatest technical wrestler in the history of this business. tremendous stuff. The match is going to be great. The pathway to get there, I hope they don't murky it up too much. And I'm very excited to see the end result.
Yeah, I probably should dislike this to some extent because we're doing the MJF sets up a gauntlet, sets up the Mortal Kombat Tower once more gimmick, which is like at least the third time, I think, in AEW's history. But frankly, it's an excuse for Bryan Danielson to wrestle weekly for a month. So I'm not going to complain about that. That's always a good time. Later on, I think it's revealed on Rampage that the first opponent is going to be Takeshita, which is... I can't wait. I might be more excited for that than the Elite Death Triangle blow off. I did enjoy one moment in here where MJF teased running into the ring to beat up Danielson. I think it was. It was when he was challenged to the Iron Man match. Taz on commentary because he's playing slight bit of favoritism towards MJF since they're both Long Island guys, if I recall correctly. Taz says, I hope he doesn't do it. And Tony Schiavone, and just the only way he could do it, just goes, "Do it, dumbass." And it was great. Just a nice little moment. I thought this was a really good segment. I can see how some people might get tired of the MJF act because it is, he has a playbook and he uses it. And, but frankly, I think he runs the playbook really well. So I like it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see where this whole thing goes because I love me some Bryan Danielson. I know you're a Bryan Danielson, Mark. And yes. Then you have MJF, who's hotter than literally anybody in the world right now as far as professional wrestling is concerned. And this is going to be a lot of fun. It's now they have a reason for why MJF isn't defending the title between Winners Coming and Revolution. Because he laid out the challenge for Bryan Danielson. And then you could still shoehorn a match in there if you want.
Yeah.
But MJF's gimmick is almost, I'm barely going to wrestle for you people because I'm a free agent at the end of 2023. I think this worked really well.
Yeah. Very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we had Swerve Strickland, who was with, they're called the Mogul Affiliates, Parker Bordeaux, and that weird tattooed guy against AR Fox. And if you remember, I can't remember what the match was called, but it's basically Three Stages of Hell, the Lucha Underground version, when it was Dante Fox and Killshot. And then a famous John Moxley line, "I didn't know Swerve Strickland was Killshot."
Yeah, we found that out 2 weeks ago on Renee's podcast.
Mm-hmm. Just great
stuff.
It's an all-time match. I highly recommend you go out and see it. It's better if you watch that season of Lucha Underground from start to finish because it's got a lot of story in it. But this was a fun TV match that you knew Swerve was going to win. But they did a great job of entertaining the crowd, giving some really exciting professional wrestling. And it filled time without feeling like it was a waste. It was just a perfect TV match.
Yeah, this was a lovely match. I liked it a lot, actually. I went 4.25 stars on it. AR Fox really showed out, and Swerve Strickland just did fantastic work. I mean, I think Swerve is really fantastic, and I think his 2023 is only going to be better than 2022. I think he's just set up for a main event heel run, to be honest, if they pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I really hope they do pull the trigger on it. I'm just worried about the situation he's in now and how that's going to hinder that potential run. But we've seen worse things to start off to become better. And then right after that, we had the segment with Saraya, Toni Storm, and Sheeta, which we've already talked about. This one was interesting because right after that segment, we had Austin and Colton Gunn come out and give a funeral for FTR. And now Austin said, "We're here to pay our respects to FTR's legacy." I was thinking that they might be WWE bound, especially with how they dropped all their titles in rapid succession. And then they're obviously not on this show because they were at Wrestle Kingdom. But now maybe they're not going anywhere. Where do you land on this, Fred?
I haven't got the vibe that they're leaving, at least not anytime soon. I don't know when their contract is up offhand. If so, maybe I'm missing out on some news that like it expires this month or already has or something. But I think that they would be better suited, I think, to stay in AEW. I think they do better there than WWE, especially with the recent changes in WWE. I don't know that they want to go back to shaving backs on Raw. So I don't know. We'll see. I think that after the year they had, for them to go back to WWE would be foolish. Now, for God's sake, use WWE to get leverage on your contract and get more cash for sure. But I mean, it's, you know, they have a bunch of leverage right now. And I would certainly hope that they do something better than head back to mid-card land on SmackDown or something.
Yeah, it would be a big disappointment, but I'm wondering if they, because Paul's in charge and we know that how the NXT people have that really, really tight relationship with Paul Levesque, if they would be interested in going back, if they would be one of those acts. So yeah. It'll be interesting, but hopefully they stay in AEW because that tag division needs them, especially with it's a little thin right now considering the injuries. Hell, Adam Cole still isn't back from his concussion. And you also have the Trios division, which is taking up the Young Bucks, taking up the Lucha Brothers. They need tag teams right now. And it feels like the House of Black is going to be likely getting that next title shot. I at least think so after the Best of Seven series, which kudos to Tony Khan for getting a round ball rock for that. All-time stuff.
Like, yes.
Some people just get it, and Tony Khan does. Just a game seven, you hear round ball rock, it's just perfect. But they need tag teams. It's going to get to a point where the Acclaimed are going to run through everybody, and then you're going to have to start splitting up some of these trios to make it happen. I hope it doesn't become a big issue, and losing FTR could end up being a big deal.
It could be, but I think they'll be all right if FTR does leave. I mean, it'd be a blow, but there's other teams they could use. I would certainly hope that they become more central to the AEW tag belts this year if they do stick around. I think that they are just so good that they should be central to that moving forward, or possibly moved over to the Trios Championship as another possibility. They don't have who would be their natural partner, CM Punk, but it's easy enough to line someone. They can bring in Wardlow. That's a slot they could use him in for a while and have them pursue those belts.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out with the tag team division, especially with how hot the Acclaimed is. Like, I loved that they gave Lethal and Jarrett some time with them because I thought it was very fun. TBS
way
champion,
better than I thought it would be. And before this, it was the Britt and Hayter, or I'm sorry, the Saraya, Sheeta, and Storm segment.
Oh, I already mentioned that, but we already talked
just,
about
just,
it.
So just putting it in there chronologically.
Well, did you not hear me mention it, Fred? How dare you?
Oh, well, my apologies.
No worries. Let's continue talking about this because TBS champion Jade Cargill comes down to the ring with Red Velvet and Layla Gray. Sorry, it was her and Red Velvet with Layla Gray at ringside versus Kiera Hogan and Sky Blue. And Red Velvet leaves on Jade Cargill. And then Jade gets the win anyways and seemingly set up a split with Red Velvet and Jade Cargill. This to me, Fred, felt like they were setting up Red Velvet to be the one to beat Jade Cargill because you have one, Red Velvet's kind of a homegrown commodity, give somebody a rub, and she spent time learning all about Jade, her secrets, her weaknesses, to be able to exploit them. But at the end of the day, it's still Red Velvet. Do you think that they are going to make the move to beat Jade and have it be Red Velvet? Because no. it could end up being her 50th match where she can't go 50-0. It stops at 49.
They could. I don't get that vibe off this right now. I mean, that could change. They could really heat this up some more over the next couple weeks. Right now, it feels cold to me, and it feels like, as much as, you know, we've talked about how the TBS title is a little stale at this point, all the same, I don't feel like they've got anyone heated up to take it off of her. And I just don't get that feeling off of Red Velvet that it's time for her to do it right now. If they get hot somehow, that's different, but it just doesn't feel... I just don't see Red Velvet as the one that will revitalize this championship.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but the way they set it up gave me vibes that that's kind of the direction they were going, even though Red Velvet doesn't make the most sense. So how this continues to evolve, and we'll talk about when we get to Rampage here, or sorry, Battle of the Belts in a little bit, because there is a little bit more with that. And we're going to talk a lot about Jade, because there I have some takes. The main event of this show, Samoa Joe against Darby Allin. And Darby Allin's getting the title shot because he came out to defend his friend Wardlow after the match last week where Samoa Joe's just beating the living crap out of Wardlow. And you had Nick Wayne sitting ringside, which is a very nice touch because Darby Allin's trainer, Buddy Wayne, from the Pacific Northwest, Nick Wayne is his son. And this match, look, it was different than the first one. I don't think it was better than the first one that they had, but I liked this one better.
I liked this one a lot.
I had more fun watching this match than I did the first one. This was perfect. Samoa Joe bully Darby underdog. He put him away. Then they had a lot of cohesiveness. They had great chemistry. And then at the end, you had Sting come out like a proud dad. Oh, no, he's not going to turn on him. He's just going to celebrate with him. The way this whole thing went about, I think I gave this 4.5. Just tremendous. Like, you could not have done this any better.
Yeah, I thought this was great. I prefer the first one just because it was, I don't know, it was something about that first one was just really special, just how Darby was bumping and how much of a showcase it was for that. But I thought this was a great match. I went 4.25 on it, and I'm kind of wondering if I should have went 4.5, but it was a fantastic match. Just so many memorable spots in this. Darby definitely trying to die again. Just took some hellacious bumps, and Joe took a few serious ones too. But this was a lot of fun. It was fast paced and hard hitting. And the hometown crowd really helped push it over the top. I think to like just being a really memorable match.
Yeah, the crowd. This is one of the better crowds that we've seen on Dynamite in a long time. It helped that they had, I think, 10,000 people in the building because it was the debut in the Pacific Northwest, and obviously Bryan Danielson's hometown. Well, Aberdeen is a suburb of Seattle, but you understand. Yeah. Overall, this is a tremendously fun Dynamite. And then, listen, Rampage. I slapped the wrong button, but let's talk about this Rampage show. And as I was saying, Tony Khan has been listening to us, Fred, because we talked about a month ago, the fact that John Moxley should be the centerpiece of Rampage. Just make it the Moxley show. And guess what? Bingo! They did. And this has become the John Moxley show. And it's been tremendous.
Yeah, I loved this show. I thought this was the best Rampage in a while, I think. You know, this opener was 4.5 stars to me. It was just really great. Top Flight looked amazing. I think that's the best Top Flight has looked as a team in their time in AEW. Moxley and Danielson gave them a lot to work with them, but still, you know, maintained that they were the top guys and ended up winning. But this was a blast of a match. There were some really great counters done by Top Flight and more hard-hitting Top Flight stuff than you might expect. But yeah, I like this a lot. Starting right off with a brawl off a tope to Mox as he's coming to the ring was a nice touch, and I think gave it a really a lively start for the episode.
Sorry, I've got COVID right now, and my throat is not being great to me at the moment. I'm okay, but it's a little bit of a struggle, and that's why I hit the wrong button on my damn mouse. Listen, this was a really fun Rampage, and I love the fact that even though Top Flight has lost every single match, I feel like they have been elevated just because of their association with the Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah, I think so too. And they kind of have a win over them from the Battle Royal gimmick with AR Fox. That definitely was positioned as a win for them over Mox and Danielson and Claudio. But, you know, by the standards, it wasn't like a real win, but I feel like it was still enough of a win that it boosted them up the standings in AEW. And hopefully they'll be able to keep some momentum going forward and do some really cool stuff.
I agree completely. Honestly, I would love to see if you're going to have the Elite win on Wednesday, which I think is the direction, I think they're going to end up winning Escalera de la Muerte. I think that's what it's called. I think they're going to win. I think Top Flight should be the one to take the belts off of them with AR Fox. And then at the end of that, you can have AR Fox split from Top Flight. Maybe you turn Top Flight heel, and then they can go on like a big tag run and continue their elevation, because we need to see more of these guys. We just do.
Yeah, they've been doing really good work recently, and I feel like this was a high watermark for them, even off the hot streak they've been on.
No, 100%. This was excellent stuff. Honestly, this whole show was very good. AEW Women's World Champion Jamie Hayter and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defeated the Renegade Sisters, Charlotte and Robin Renegade. And I'm going to let you talk about this, Fred, because there was a spot with the Renegade Sisters that made us both double take.
Yeah. Now I'm going to open this by saying that I thought this was actually a pretty damn solid match for a tag match on Rampage, which is usually very much a throwaway spot. But they got some time, and I thought they put on like a very solid 3-star match. The Renegade Sisters look better than usual, better than I think I've ever seen them, to be honest. And Britt's in-ring work was just a step above what it usually has been recently, at least. But there was a spot where early in the match, the Renegades had taken control, I think, on Hayter. And one of the Renegade Sisters called the other over to the corner and went to do the old school, I'm putting my foot up on the top turnbuckle so you can slam our shared opponent's head into my foot instead of the turnbuckle, because that will be harder for reasons. I don't know. It's wrestling. But she went to do that. Hayter was dragged over by the other Renegade Sister. And then for whatever reason, before the turnbuckle/foot slam was delivered, she took her foot off the top rope, and then they just did the turnbuckle thing. And I was just watching it like, why bother? Like, it just looked a little goofy, but it didn't really detract from the match for me. I just kind of had to laugh at it for a second. But yeah, I enjoyed this. It was solid. You know, well above what you would expect in this slot.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is that I don't know anything about the Rampage Sisters or Renegade Sisters. I don't know anything about them. They looked like competent television wrestlers, and that's more than you can say with a lot of local talents, which I believe they are, that are brought in.
They've been around for a little bit. I don't know if they're under proper AEW contracts, but I think they have kind of preferred jobber/dark elevation talent status.
Yeah, I mean, they exist. They're fine. They're competent. I think that's the big thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this was, but I do think this was a step above the prior work of theirs I've seen. Not that I'm putting together a 10-disc set of the best of the Renegade Sisters. But yeah, I like this. Yeah, this was good.
Yeah, and we're going to kind of go through the rest of the show, because I am losing it. Because of COVID-19, unfortunately. House of Black had a pre-tape from an undisclosed location in the shadows, basically talking shit at Eddie Kingston. And we're here to help you. That's interesting.
Yeah, this will be interesting to watch going forward. I thought this was far more direct than most House of Black promos, which was a positive here. But, you know, this got played into on Battle of the Belts as well. Next up, we had Preston Vance versus Sonico. I've seen Sonico a couple times, and he is a solid worker. I thought he did look pretty good in like this 1-minute match, where he basically chopped Vance a few times and then got hit by a spine buster and died. And then the full Nelson into a big lariat and died. After the match, Vance and Jose beat him up and unmasked him and dragged him halfway up the ramp. this was there. I mean, it was just a squash. I don't have anything particular to say about it, but it happened. And then we had Michael Bennett and Darby Allin, our second Darby Allin match of the week. And I liked this a lot. I thought this was a very, very good match. After watching this, I want to see Mike Bennett and Matt Taven get bigger spots in the company. I just thought they worked this match very well. Darby was not as high spotty. You know, he wasn't doing as ridiculous stuff as he was against Samoa Joe, which is, you know, probably for the best. But it's Darby Allin. He still did some crazy stuff. And Bennett, I mean, is just a hell of a worker. So this was hot. Of course, it was taped in Portland. So still in the Pacific Northwest. And the crowd loved it. So this was, I thought, just a very good main event for a great episode of Rampage.
Yeah, I agree completely. I'm kind of over like Darby just doing like some of these random title defenses. They're fun, but maybe it's just me, and I'm not the safety police, but I just worry that Darby, with his style, wrestling consistently like this, is going to get him hurt in a long-term capacity, and that just kind of worries me. Am I reaching here, Fred?
I don't think you are. Like similarly, I'm not really the safety police. I have something of a medical background, so like some of this stuff, you know, so I do have some thoughts on it. Some aspects of wrestling that are maybe more safety police than not. But Darby Allin is like the one guy in the world that I do wonder if he bumps just way too hard and is just really doing harm to himself long term. But, you know, this is what he's doing. It's his body. You can make those arguments. I will say that there's really nothing so outwardly gross that, like, he's taking just wildly unsafe bumps. He's just taking high velocity bumps, which hurt a lot, I'm sure. But it's not like he's purposefully landing on his head on a regular basis or anything. So that's one thing. To the benefits of it, I guess, or at least, you know, minimizing the harm of it, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, this was a good match. Mike Bennett, I think he's a guy that you should have wrestle on TV more often. You have him get a ton of wins on Dark and Elevation, then he can lose on TV. He's a very good wrestler.
Yeah, I thought this was this is just really, really solid, and I think there's more you can do with Bennett and Taven in a lot of different directions in AEW.
Yeah, 100%. Now let's go to Battle of the Belts. We talked about the Acclaimed beating Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett in the No Holds Barred match. So let's get to what I really want to talk about. Jade Cargill beating Sky Blue, and this showed exactly what I think Jade should be long term. Jade Cargill should be AEW's Goldberg. Reason being, I don't think she's going to be a great bell-to-bell wrestler in a long-term sense. But you know what she is? She's an attraction. She's physically attractive. I mean, just look at her physique. It's incredible. Like, normal humans are not built like Jade Cargill. Her muscle definition, her muscle tone, and you combine that with her presence in the ring, it's truly incredible what the whole package is. And then you combine with her big spots in the ring. The Jaded is a tremendous finishing move because it looks physically impressive, it's relatively safe, and it looks like she outright kills these women when she does it. And this one, where Sky Blue, I think she attempted like a sunset flip or something, and then she there is a hurricanrana, and Jade catches her, lifts her up, flips her, throws her like she's John Cena, and then has her suspended on her torso, grabs the arms, jaded.
That was fantastic.
This is what you want from Jade Cargill. Be an ass kicker. Be a badass. Be in there for 5 minutes. Don't overexpose yourself. Get out and be this massive attraction, this huge aura star. Jade Cargill needs to be this company's Goldberg, and I think it can work. Now, the way she's going right now, eventually you're going to have to develop something. She can't go in there and work like that with Toni Storm. She can't go in there and work like that with, if Mercedes Moné comes into the company. You're going to have to do something a little different. You're going to have to do like 10-minute like walk-in brawls or something in order to compensate and try and have a little give and take with these tremendous in-ring workers. But for right now, for where she is, where she's positioned, Tony Khan needs to book her like Goldberg. And you can make a lot of money. You already have a mega star aura around Jade. And you need to maximize it. I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I you know, I kind of had a revelation on Wednesday night when she was working her her match there, and she just did an awesome choke slam that I wasn't expecting. And it's like I had you know, a couple neurons touch each other, and I was like, man, she should just be basically working like Brian Cage. She should just have developed the moveset of a creator wrestler, of a teenager who's just looking to do the coolest moves, and just have her do cool moves in 6-minute matches and hit people really hard. And that, I think that will be good enough. That could be your calling card. I thought that the pay-per-view match with Athena kind of hinted towards this, where she they just drop bombs on each other for about 4 minutes. If you can get that going to like a regular thing where her big matches are just 8 or 10 minutes of just going all out on each other with big moves, I think that will make I think that'll work really well for her. And I think that could really revitalize her in-ring aspect. Like, even add just like, she doesn't need a wild top rope move. She doesn't need to be doing like a shooting star press or anything. But if she were to just occasionally bust out like a flying elbow drop off the top, I think that would be very effective for her. Just something along those lines. Maybe a flying clothesline, like just relatively basic top rope moves that will help just shake things up just a little bit. But I liked this match quite, you know, like reasonably well. It was still kind of sloppy at points, which is not a surprise given it's Jade Cargill and Sky Blue. I went 2.5 on it, but the finish on this was just an absolute all-timer.
Listen, it reminds me of, and I kind of mentioned, peak John Cena, when he would just catch guys and literally throw like 250-pound men.
Oh yeah.
Like they were like practice dummies. Like things that weigh like 40, 50 pounds, and he's throwing them around.
Yeah.
That is what this looked like.
Yeah, she handled this like a bag of dog food, like just slinging it around. But yeah, I think that more of this would be good for her, I think.
I think so too, and I hope that we continue to see more of this, and it would just make everything better with Jade. And but I will say that they did advance the Red Velvet storyline here at the end, because whatchamacallit, Jade gets the win. Red Velvet comes down ringside and does applauds. Then they have the 48-0 in the background. They're continuing to build that tension between these two women. And then we had the main event, Battle of the Belts 5. Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy with Danhausen. And they made note that the Best Friends did not come down with him versus Kip Sabian with Penelope Ford. And this match was okay. But the real story of the match was you had Butcher and the Blade come down and sit on chairs ringside. And as they're setting up the chairs to do something to Orange Cassidy, down comes the Best Friends and takes them out. And then you get a couple orange punches for the win, and Orange Cassidy beats Kip Sabian. I'm kind of done with Kip Sabian. Like, what is this guy?
I don't know. I will say I thought this was his best performance in his comeback. I'm not exactly clamoring for like a big push for him, but this was better than the match with Pac, where he brought Pac down pretty badly, I thought. A couple quick notes on this match, just various things I noticed. First of all, we nearly went 2 hours without Jim Ross kind of doing something silly on commentary, and then as Excalibur and Tony are putting over the storyline of the Best Friends, you know, maybe not being on the same page with Orange Cassidy, Jim Ross just buried the best friends and said that they were crybabies for possibly being angry at Orange, which just kind of undercut the whole thing. It was very reminiscent of like when Gorilla Monsoon in the 80s would say that, you know, a baby face in a submission hold would never give up. And it's like, well, what's the point of any of this? You know, what are we doing here? Early on, Kip stole Orange Cassidy's sunglasses, sat in a chair outside of the ring, and then just started singing the Raspberry Zombie for some reason. That was unusual. And then the cameraman turned heel because Kip did a hug with Penelope and the bunny, and they did the best friend zoom out, but it wasn't the best friends. It was the enemies of the best friends, and that was uncalled for and rude. Can't believe that happened. I hope that action was taken.
Hey, you know what? Kazuchika Okada is going to send a cease and desist order to Kip Sabian right now.
You can do it for Okada's Rainmaker pose, and you can do it for the hug of the best friends, and that's it. No one else.
Because it's an ode to Okada.
Yeah, you can't sell for the heels. This isn't right. I'm going to call my senator. But yeah, I thought this was a solid match. There was a little too much, like, air quote storytelling of, like, Kip doing a lot of Orange Cassidy mannerisms and like Orange getting mad and a nice little reversal of the usual thing. But I thought they did a little too much of that. But I thought this was a rather good match. I went 3.5 on it. I thought it fit in nicely in the slot. Not like going to make a year end retrospective for anything other than the zoom out. But this was fine. This was perfectly acceptable.
You know what's hilarious, Fred? I know who your senator is, and he's a heel. So,
of them are so.
Now overall, Fred. This is a really good week of of AEW programming. Man, COVID's having me say WWE a lot.
Heel turns.
No joke. Dynamite up next is in Los Angeles at the Forum. 8,188 tickets have been distributed per WrestleTix as of when we started recording at 2 p.m. Eastern time on Monday the 9th. We have a loaded show, and it would not shock me if we get a little bit of more Mercedes Moné steam, and just in general, if we get some more tickets sold here. Escuela de la Muerte, the Elite versus Death Triangle, match 7 of the series.
Give me the ball because I'm going to dunk it.
Dunk it! Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter versus Saraya and Toni Storm. We'll see if that ends up holding up. John Moxley versus Adam Page, which I expect to open the show. Danielson versus Konosuke Takeshita. Jungle Hook. They're announcing it one time only. So we'll see if that...
Yeah, they're pushing that part really hard.
Yeah, I find that very interesting. I mean, we know Hook's persona, but the fact that they're pushing it that hard tells me we're going to get something out of this match that is unexpected. And then they're taking on Lee Moriarty and Big Bill, which is a tremendous, tremendous pro wrestling name. And we're getting a Jericho Appreciation Society promo, which we are expecting a potential breakup of the JAS, and this could continue that story. And then Rampage, Eddie Kingston and Ortiz versus the House of Black, and TJ versus Ruby and Willow Nightingale in a street fight. Listen. When you have Ruby Soho handing Willow Nightingale a hockey stick, hey, Willow, I know where you can put this. Gah, that got me excited. I don't think I've ever been so excited for a women's match in this company than I am for this street fight, because that little promo video was tremendous.
Yeah, and if you remember the last TJ match that was a street fight like a little over a year ago when it was with Penelope and the Bunny, like that was... I know some people are very tired of plunder matches, but they went all out on the plunder on that one, and I thought it worked really well. So I'm hopeful that will be a good match.
Yeah, I hope so too. And in the meantime, Fred, that is it for AEW this week. We're really spoiled with this company and getting some tremendous wrestling.
Yeah, it gives us so much good stuff. I actually had to update my Dynamite Dozen earlier today because of the second Darby Samoa Joe match. Sneaking that in at number 12 for now. We'll see how long that lasts since it's right on the precipice. But I thought that they had three good to great shows. And to be able to put out 4 hours of wrestling that good just on free TV is pretty awesome.
And not one match was under 3 stars.
One was for me. Well, ignoring the squash, the Preston Van squash, but yeah, it was a hell of a show, hell of a trio of shows, I should say, all around. I do have a cheap plug to work in before on our way out. I have launched a Patreon for myself and my extra writing. You can find it at patreon.com/flagrantwrestling, spelled properly, unlike my Twitter handle. I just posted right before the show. This year, I've been tracking the voting on the individual matches on cagematch.net, which are tracking. I've used a system to try to put those together for like a way to mathematically measure who's had the best year in ring. And so I got caught up on the math for that for 2022. And I just posted on there my top 50 from those formulas, and I'm getting ready to write that up and hope to have that up on Voices of Wrestling later this week. But if you want to go ahead and see the top 50 and take a look at that, you can sign up at patreon.com/flagrantwrestling, $5 a month. I am aiming to generally write, at least one or two things a week about wrestling on top of my usual column. Just not this week because I'm finishing up a project for, real work, which is taking up a lot of my time, but.
Real work. The worst. What's real work? I don't even know what real work is anymore. All I do is talk football and wrestling all day, every day. It kicks so much ass. I am so incredibly lucky. But in the meantime, you can find us at Good Bad Hungy on Twitter. You can email us at hungypod@gmail.com. You can also find us in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, where you can ask us a question. We will answer it on the air. We have had some good discussions in the Discord, especially with our old friend South Dakota Jones, one of the best writers, also a tremendous kayfabe name. I really enjoy that. You can find me on Twitter at The Real Forno and at The Vikings Wire. You can find Fred on Twitter at Flagrant Wrestling, like Ted Turner saying it. Not like an actual aristocrat would say wrestling. Listen, thank you for tuning in. Please rate, subscribe, and review our show. Everything helps us spread the great world of AEW and be able to get this into the ears of multiple individuals. And especially if you're on YouTube, leave us a comment. We love reading those and hearing how we can make the show better and what parts you really enjoyed. In the meantime, NFL playoffs are here. The Vikings made the playoffs. Now it's time to tell everybody they ain't frauds, and I'm very excited. In the meantime, have a great week, and Skol Vikings.
Have a great week, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.